Hi, Cliff Goldstein here, and welcome to the program. Today's talk is part of a series I've been doing titled, Excuse Me, Dr. Dawkins. This one is called In the Beginning. Now, the Dr. Dawkins I'm referring to is Dr. Richard Dawkins, the Charles Simony Professor of Public Understanding of Science. His chair is at Oxford University, and he's a well-known writer and public speaker. He's a leading guru in the kind of take-no-prisoners atheism that seems to be on the rise among some intellectuals. He's not only an atheist, he's overtly hostile to the whole idea of religion. And he recently wrote a book called The God Delusion, which I've looked at on here and might come back to again. Now, Dawkins' claim to fame, however, really came a number of years ago with perhaps his most famous book, The Selfish Gene, the million-copy international bestseller. At least that's what my front cover copy says. It promotes this idea. Well, let me read you from his preface to the first edition. Let me just read you from it. Here he says. He says here, this book should be read almost as though it were science fiction. Well, anyway, I'm not going to take that one. What I want to do today is look at a few basic statements he makes in this book, a few premises upon which he uses to build his case. And his case is that we are the products of random mutation and natural selection, period. In other words, this is a book written to explain our existence without any recourse to God or gods or any kind of deity whatsoever. It's a classic attempt at what could be called a purely naturalistic explanation of our universe. The idea that the universe in and of itself is sufficiently self-explanatory. You know, one of his fellow travelers, Carl Sagan, had expressed it something like this. The universe is all that ever was or is. Which is another way of saying, hey folks, there is no God. We are here alone, period, the result of chance, nothing more. Or as someone else once expressed it, the universe is just one of those things that happen from time to time. You see, for thousands of years, folks would look up at the sky or look around in the world and concluded that, well, something greater than the world, something beyond the world, made it. That was called gods, the demiurge, whatever. I mean, though hardly an absolute flawless conclusion, you know, it certainly is a logical one, a reasonable one to be sure. Maybe even billions of people have been making it for a long time. Indeed, if anything, the incredible advances of science in the past few hundred years, which reveals this massive complexity that most people centuries ago couldn't have never imagined, only makes the idea, I think, that of intelligence designer so much more logical and so much more reasonable. At least one would think so. I mean, you think about it, as I've said here before, nothing came from itself, nothing created itself, whatever exists only exists because something else preceded it, and so on until you get back to something itself that wasn't created, something that always existed, and that is for what most people God. Though it's hardly a flaw, I mean, it's hardly a perfect argument, it's certainly reasonable nonetheless. Nevertheless, all through history, we could find folks who've taken a different track, that of believing everything is just atoms in the void. You can find some pre-Socratic philosophers, we're talking 300-400 years before Christ, arguing for a purely materialistic view of the world. Some of the Stoics later argued for the same things. Though for centuries, pretty much under the heavy hand of the Roman Church, these ideas were squelched, but then they broke through with a vengeance during the Enlightenment and as we have today, where the whole philosophical foundation of the West is premised on this notion that pure matter and energy alone. The universe somehow or another explains itself. You can't step beyond that. You can't invoke a god or anything that goes beyond the natural world. Anyway, Dawkins' book here is basically one such attempt to explain all human existence as something purely materialistic, as something purely arising from itself. You know, I mean arising from the stuff of what it is, from nature alone, the atom and the void. It's an attempt to explain all created existence totally within the confines of the creation itself, with no recourse to anything outside of. It's kind of like arguing, as I've said elsewhere, basically, that the chessboard and the rules of chess and everything about chess kind of arose from the game itself, that all these things were already there in the wood and the plastic and the metal of whatever you made the chess game, or whatever the chess was made out of. Thus, Dawkins' task, as you can imagine, is not a simple one. In fact, it's one that I hope to show doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. It's one that demands some tremendous, even incredulous, leaps of faith. Yes, it's a word I know Dr. Dawkins doesn't like, and we reject it as being applicable to himself. Yet in many ways, I want to show that Richard Dawkins is a man of deep faith. In fact, he's got a lot more faith than I do. And trust me, folks, he needs it. Nevertheless, let's get started with this book. I want to read you from the first line from this chapter. Because here's where he gets into the gist of what he wants to say. You know, this building of a materialistic universe. In the beginning was simplicity. Okay? That's his line. In the beginning was simplicity. That's what he starts this out with. Now, let's think about this for a minute with this opening sentence here. In the beginning with simplicity. Now, he's taking off from the Bible here. He's taking off from the Bible, you know, the verse, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning was simplicity. Now, simplicity. This is a key. Because the key to his whole theory here, which is premised on the idea that out of simplicity arose the complexity we see in the universe today. This is the crucial idea, the foundational idea behind the whole thing. This is the whole idea that science is supposedly proven that all the deep complexity can arise, that we see arises out of simplicity. The idea is something simple can, through many small steps, end up getting much more complicated. This is a premise that could be hotly debated and contested, but that's not where I want to go now. Anyway, let's look at this opening line here a little more. In the beginning, there was simplicity. Now, he's not talking about the beginning of life on Earth. He's not talking about the famous primordial prebiotic soup out of which these simple chemical compounds arose that we're told were all the precursors to life on Earth. No, he's talking about the beginning as way back, the origins of the universe himself. Let me read you more. He says, in the beginning was simplicity. It's difficult enough explaining how even a simple universe began. I take it as agreed that it would be even harder to explain the sudden springing up of fully armed of complex order, life, or a being capable of creating life. Darwin's theory of evolution by natural selection is satisfying because it shows us a way by which simplicity could turn into complexity. Now, notice what he's saying here. He's making a statement. He's starting out how even a simple universe could begin. Now, I'm not sure what he means by a simple universe. What's a simple universe? Has anyone seen a simple universe? Is that something that's supposed to exist somewhere out there, outside the universe we find ourselves in? I know that cosmologists have speculated on the existence of other universes, billions of them maybe. But again, it's just speculation. But no one has seen these universes, you know, and so on. You know, and so forth to prove their existence, to use a phrase from Dawkins, one that he likes to use to disbelievers in God. Maybe there's a flying spaghetti monster out there as well. I mean, there's as much evidence for that as they are for these other universes, much less the simple universe that he's talking about. Let's give him, however, the benefit of the doubt and say that Dr. Dawkins' simple universe was merely rhetorical, something he used to make a point, nothing more. Well, the point is basically he's saying that a simple universe would be hard enough to explain than how much one like ours, how much more so one like ours, one filled with complex life. In other words, he admits that our universe is complex and it's very difficult to explain. Okay. However, he now claims, though, that Darwin's theory of natural selection is a mechanism that explains the universe, explains how, listen to what he says, how simplicity could, let me find the quote here, how simplicity could change into complexity, how unordered atoms could group themselves into even more complex patterns until they ended up manufacturing people. Again, this is his basic argument. It's right here. It's what we're supposed to believe as rational, logical, as a rational, logical, and scientific argument that explains all life without any recourse to God or intelligent designer. According to Dawkins, it was all unordered atoms, you know, protons and neutrons and electrons that could group themselves together, you know, and then from something inherent in themselves, something arising from their own structures, could end up coming out, and when they're done, quoting him, manufacturing people. That's his argument. He then says here that Darwin's evolution is the only feasible explanation for this. However, let's look at where Dawkins has taken us here. Remember, we're in the beginning. We're at the creation of the universe. We're in a pre-Darwinian stage here. This point is crucial. Don't miss it. Dawkins is a zoologist, but he's taking us back to physics, to cosmogony, because, well, he's got to. He's got to explain how all the elements came up that made Darwinian evolution came into being. These things just didn't happen. There's got to be some explanation for the chemicals and the elements and the forces that over time, in and of themselves, created the Darwinian world in which we live. And that's what he's trying to explain, Darwin's theory. You know, but he's beginning with time before evolution itself. Please don't miss this point. He's arguing for a time before evolution began, so we're in a pre-natural selection world. We're looking at the environment which gave rise to natural selection. This is important because remember, Dawkins' premise, the edifice upon which he's built this giant structure of evolution, is random mutation and natural selection. So Dawkins is going to have to come up with something to explain the rise of natural selection, since in his scenario, something had to create him. Well, what was that? Well, he talks about, in a sense, he talks about how Darwin's theory is really a form of what he calls survival of the stable. And then he goes on to explain how the universe is made out of stable things. Everything from the Matterhorn to raindrops to waves to rocks, he says, to a greater or lesser extent, are a stable pattern of atoms. Now, listen to this. He says that because these are stable patterns, he says that these are things that we think of as needing explanations. Please don't miss this, because he says here we think of them as needing explanations. What he's implying is that we think that it needs, well, it's obvious. His idea is that they really don't need explanations. They just have to be. A galaxy just has to be. Rain just has to be. Rocks just have to be. Talk about an assumption. But let's go on, because it gets even better. In this context of these stable molecular patterns, the things that we think need explanations but really don't, he then goes on to describe, of all things, a hemoglobin molecule, saying that it is made up of, let me see, he's got 574 amino acid molecules that are arranged in four chains that twist around each other to form a globular three-dimensional structure that he says is of bewildering complexity. So by his own admission, this molecule has 574 amino acids that line up in very complicated chains. Google the hemoglobin, and you can see for yourself just how complicated a single one of these molecules are. Now, here's where I believe Dawkins begins to expose just how weak his foundation is. And this is what we're looking at, the foundation. Remember, this is the means by which natural selection arose. And since they are the key elements of evolution, since they are evolution, what foundation does he place them on? Anyway, after just explaining this complicated hemoglobin molecule, listen to what he writes, because here it's all exposed. He says, hemoglobin is a modern molecule used to illustrate the principle that atoms tend to fall into stable patterns. Hemoglobin? You've got to be kidding me. It was bad enough when he used things like galaxies and raindrops as examples of orders that didn't need explanation. But now he's taking an incredibly complicated thing like a hemoglobin molecule, something that he says is of bewildering complexity, and argues basically that it just happens that way. You know, just the way atoms, you know, electrons, protons, just happen to fall in stable patterns. It would be looking at my watch and saying that, well, the parts just had to fall into place. I remember reading somewhere once that hemoglobin is so complicated that the universe would have to be trillions of years old or something like that in order for something like that to be created by chance. Now listen to what comes next, because this is crucial. This is where we're getting right to the gist of it. Okay, he says, the point that is relevant here is that before the coming on the life on Earth, some rudimentary evolution of molecules could have occurred by an ordinary process of physics and chemistry. There is no need to think of design or purposeness here. Listen to this. I wonder what could, if he could explain to us the ordinary process of physics and chemistry that brought about hemoglobin. What evidence does he have? You know, you might as well say that it's undirected, undesigned natural processes created a kidney dialysis machine. He acts as if this all is just plain and natural with no need of explanation. Notice, too, that he talked about, and I quote him, some rudimentary form of, some rudimentary evolution of molecules. We're in a pre-natural selection world here. Just be aware of what's happening. Dawkins is arguing evolution without the two key components of evolution, mutation and natural selection. They don't exist yet. This is some rudimentary evolution that we're supposed to accept. Not one word about how this was to occur. Everything we see in nature, from human sexual reproduction to the sonar of bats to the rise of the human nervous system, is to be explained by this natural selection. But he doesn't have them here, so he has to posit some rudimentary evolution of molecules instead, and that's just the way it is. In fact, according to Dawkins, it's the way it has to be. Now, here is where we get to the clincher. Here is where I was stunned by the audacity of the assumptions, at the grand leap of faith and speculation that is pawned off as necessity, as something that must be true, even by definition. Listen to these next lines. After saying that some rudimentary evolution describes it all, he writes, he says, if a group of atoms in the presence of energy falls into a stable pattern, it will tend to stay that way. The earliest form of natural selection was simply a selection of stable forms and a rejection of unstable ones. There is no mystery about this. It had to happen by definition. By definition, he's talking atoms, he's talking atomic structure, energy, and acts of these things just have to happen that way if they couldn't be any other way, please. I mean, excuse me, Dr. Dawkins, but if you know anything at all about physics, anything at all about the atomic and subatomic world, then you know that it's full of mystery. It's full of things that scientists are utterly baffled by, things they don't understand, things that they hardly deem necessary. And you say that these things have to happen by definition, no mystery? You know what the foundations of all physics is? It's quantum theory, which still remains one of the most baffling forms of sciences today. All these atoms that he's talking about are based on quantum mechanics, and Dr. Dawkins just brushes it all off as if it's the way it has to be, that there's nothing mysterious about it, that they have to fall into these patterns. By definition, this is a slick move. It's a subtle transition to analytic philosophy to make a point that's absolutely unwarranted by the facts. A bachelor, by definition, has to be married. He, you know, has to be unmarried. He couldn't be married. That's what something by definition is. But to look at the world and of atoms and molecules and argue that they do what they do because they have to, by definition, is sophistry. You know what it's like? It's like saying that the World Trade Center, by definition, had to have been destroyed on 9/11. That's what he's saying. Why? Well, because it was destroyed on 9/11. That's what happened. So that's what it has to be. It's that way, folks, by definition. Can you see what he's trying to pull off here? Atomic structures act a certain way, and therefore they have to act that way. There is, he said, no mystery. They do it by definition. Well, the World Trade Center was destroyed on 9/11, and so that's what the World Trade Center is by definition. The atomic world is so full of mystery. It's so full of things that baffle science. It's full of such finely tuned variables that the slightest tinker of any one of them and the physical world we know could not exist. And he's trying to tell us it's all as simple and logical as a priori, as bachelors being unmarried. You know, there are things that got like particle-wave duality. You know, is a particle a wave or is it a particle? It all depends on how you measure it. Things like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle would show the utter limits of what we can know about the world. Things like non-locality, which totally destroy our most basic concepts of space and time. These are things that defy our, you know, our most basic understanding of the world. And Dawkins argues that there's no mystery, that these things have to be that way by definition. What's fascinating, though, is that the physical world is as it is. There's really nothing that says it must be this way. We find these patterns in nature, but what says they have to be that way? Nothing. They could have been perhaps another way. You know, in fact, as I said, there's some cosmologists that talk about what they call, instead of a universe, a multiverse. The idea that in distant parts of the universe, the laws of physics as they exist here might not work the same way. They can be different. Some even speculate, as I said, about other universes where the laws of physics, where the basic fundamental patterns that we find here don't exist at all. And yet Dr. Dawkins wants us to believe that these laws upon which this rudimentary evolution was based had to be this way? By definition, that's the audacity here. He's saying by definition, he's taking things that are abstract and difficult to understand and arguing by definition. What he's doing is he's making some grand leap of scientific speculation, a grand leap of faith. Yes, this is faith, and Dr. Dawkins is a man of faith. He's got to be. And he's taking a grand leap of faith and trying to make it sound like a priori truths, truths that have to be that way, truths that are that way by definition, when the fact is they can be a thousand other ways. And this poor man mocks faith in God. So where are we? Remember, this is an attempt. This is what he's forced to do. It's an attempt to show that the universe is self-explanatory. This is an attempt to explain creation without a creator. And he's forced to take these incredibly fine-tuned and mysterious aspects of existence at the atomic level, things that are based upon the probabilistic and sometimes seemingly unreal and incomprehensible world of quantum mechanics, and argue that they have to do these things, that they do what they do because they have to do them by definition. Again, folks, to be a bachelor, has to be unmarried. But atoms, you know, don't fall into stable patterns for the same way. That is, just as a bachelor to be a bachelor has to be unmarried, atoms don't have to fall into the stable patterns that he's saying. Patterns that over time, through some rudimentary evolution that he never explains, ultimately creates the compounds that are able to, through natural selection, create human beings. Again, he's taking this and he's saying it's by definition. Yet these simple atomic structures no more had to do these things, no more have to do these things than the World Trade Center had to be destroyed on 9/11. Yet he's forced to tell us that they had to do so, you know, because, well, Dr. Dawkins has to. He has to come up with some explanation for how, in the beginning, all these processes got started. And that ultimately led to natural selection. Again, remember that natural selection and random mutation, this is the process which created us. He has to come and explain how these processes came about. And he's arguing that they had to do it by the very nature of atoms and chemistry they had to. And yet this logic makes about as much sense as saying Richard Dawkins has to take these hardly necessary truths of science and make them sound necessary because, well, if we look at the world, that is exactly what Dr. Dawkins does. Therefore, there's no mystery about it. Dr. Dawkins, by definition of Dr. Dawkins, has to make that argument. It's by definition. You know, what I found so fascinating here isn't so much the grand leaps of faith and the wild speculations. I mean, contrary to what you're led to believe, that's pretty what most of evolutionary theory is all about, is grand leaps and speculations on faith. But what I found incredible was this attempt to take this wild speculation and through a bit of linguistic sophistry make it sound like some kind of a priori truths, things that had to happen. And I believe he fails miserably. So the whole foundation upon which he tries to base this collapse completely. This, though, is what you're forced to do if you try and explain the existence of life on Earth, much less the universe, without recourse to a creator. It's kind of silly, isn't it? So what have you got? You got two options. Well, you got more than two, but basically, you've got the God option, a creator, made the atoms do these things, made them fall into these patterns, set them all up. Or you've got this happening purely by chance, purely by, you know, nothing planned it, nothing thought of it, it just sort of happened that way, and yet he argues that they had to happen that way. This is the kind of sophistry, this is the kind of desperation that he was forced to. There is no mystery about this. It had to happen by definition. Atoms by definition have to fall into stable patterns. Atoms by definition have to form hemoglobin. Atoms by definition, oh please, that's silly, that begs the question. Even if you would argue that by definition they had to, which is ridiculous, who defined them? Who gave them the definition to do these things? But this again is another one of an attempt to try to explain our world without recourse to what's the most obvious explanation for it. And that is the Creator God, the God depicted in the scriptures.